Get ready to get your nerd on.
Kick the week off right with games, gadgets, and general geekery from the ladies of the Electric Sisterhood on the Eshcast.
On Tuesday, the J-pop and alternative hotspot hits your eardrums on No Borders, No Race.
Geek Aggro is coming at you on Wednesdays to fill what's left of your cerebral cortex with the hottest beats to get you on your feet.
Then you have me, Phil the Issues Guy, with the live issues program's post-episode recaps. On live right after your favorite shows and taking all of your questions.
It's going down each week, only in the land of Ash. Nerdcore at its finest.
Hello, bastards and wenches, and welcome to the second of four Anime Boston podcast interview specials. On today's show, we have Miss Sharami Lee, who has voiced such memorable characters as Lucy in Fairy Tail, Asuna in Sword Art Online, Natsumi in Sergeant Frog, and is the new voice of Sailor Venus in the Viz Media dub of Sailor Moon. Outside of anime, she can be seen in Richard Linklater's Fast Food Nation in the role of Kim, and as Danielle in Ethan Hawke's film The Hottest State. For this interview, we are joined by my friend 42 Believer of 42's Anime Reviews, as well as contributors from the Boston Globe, the Otaku Intuit Podcast, Animazing Radio, Anime Herald, Angry Anime Bitches, and Nihon Review. So, without further ado, here is the Anime Boston 2015 Press Panel Podcast featuring Sharami Lee.
Neokage from the Otaku Intuit Podcast.
Very cool.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm Evan Borgo. I'm from the Boston Banshee Brigade and Electric Sisterhood and host of the No Borders, No Race J-Pop and Alternative Podcast.
Awesome.
Show.
Very cool. I like your shirt.
Thank That's you.
Awesome.
I made myself.
Very cool.
I'm Sarah. I go by 42 Believer and I have a YouTube channel.
Very awesome.
Doug Dingler with Animazing Radio.
Hello, hello.
Hi, Mike Farah. From Anime Herald and host of the Nerdy Talk Podcast.
Sweet.
We're Okay at Midnight from AngryAnimeBitches.com.
Hi, Adrian Block, editor of Nihon Review and executive producer at Friday Anime Podcast.
Very cool.
So I was looking at the bio they had for you, and you've done a lot more than just voiceover anime. You've actually done something in like actual acting, like in front of the camera and whatnot.
Yeah.
What have you found to be the differences between that and being in a booth all day?
Well, definitely, it's there. Time-consuming in different ways. With anime, you're stuck in a box by yourself for, 2 to 8 hours a day, and there's no one else there, so you're kind of just reacting to the animation, using that as a guideline to fit the flaps and trusting that the director is going to get reads that match, because sometimes there are not other actors in there. For an on-camera project, you'll be working on maybe one scene a day. Sometimes you might be working for 12 to 14 hours a day, depending on the project. And you have the other actors with you. So you can ad-lib, you can, kind of have a little more fun with it. As far as the differences in performance, for film work, it's a little less. You don't need to do so much with your eyes or your voice. It just is what it is, and just staying in the moment is enough. For a cartoon, you have the added challenge of staying in the moment, where you also have to make sure to fit the flaps. You also have to make sure that you're not moving too much in the booth, whereas on camera, you just have to make sure that you're in frame, and you have to, for a cartoon, make the character come alive through only using your voice. So, it's different, but I love doing both, and I have found when I'm working on a film for a month to 3 months at a time, I really miss doing voiceover, because that's all I can do is really just the film the whole time, unless I have a day off or so. But for cartoons, if I'm doing that for so long, I really start missing on camera. So I've gotten very lucky to be able to do both, and now very spoiled in that I like both to balance. So.
Now, how would you compare your favorite and least favorite parts of live action versus video game recording versus anime recording?
It's interesting that there have been times where I've thought when I'm working on it that this is not my most favorite character, and then as the show progresses it becomes one of my most favorites, because the least favorite characters in the beginning are the characters that I don't feel as confident in, like I don't know if I'm doing the best job possible, and then it's pushing me out of my comfort zone. So then once I'm realizing, like, oh, I'm expanding my range, or I'm trying something new, and I start becoming more comfortable in it, then it makes that character a little more monumental for me, and it becomes one of my favorites. I can't pick an ultimate favorite. I've had so much fun working on video games, so much fun working on camera projects, so much fun working on anime. They're all different. And I've also been very fortunate in that things that I'm dealing with in my personal life, I'll be working on a show or working on a script or auditioning for something, and my character will say something, or another character will say something, and it's almost as if that was like a message from the universe to me for whatever I was dealing with. And it's amazing that that happens right when I'm dealing with it, that that's somehow the show that I got to work on, where I got to experience that. So because of that, I am very grateful for the characters as they come, and I can't pick a favorite.
We here at B3 became really big fans of yours after your work as Natsumi in the show Sergeant Stark.
Oh, awesome. Thank you.
It's been a great gateway anime for many of our friends. So my question is, looking back, what were some of your favorite moments when it came to playing one of the many Picoponians that had to go through Kiro's never-ending spiel of idiocy?
Yeah, that was crazy fun. That was the first time that I've worked on an anime where we have been told to westernize it as much as possible. And I was working at Radio Disney. I still work for Radio Disney, but I was a DJ at the time, so we were playing a lot of Jonas Brothers, a lot of Hannah Montana, a lot of High School Musical. And so I would make jokes like that, because that was the world that I was living in on the weekends. And so Joel wanted to apply some of that into the anime, which was kind of crazy that my two worlds were colliding. And I do remember the specific episode where I think Natsumi is under whatever transfixed weird spell that she's under, and she is cussing all the time. But we also did one in a southern accent because we didn't know if it was going to get televised, so we had to do a cleaner version. And so that was like really fun to get to do. And then just getting to hang out with those guys and the frogs and all of that was awesome. I really missed that show. We talk about like that we would do anything possible to be able to work on that show again, because it was so fun.
A lot of us agree.
Yeah, I loved it.
This is a question I love to ask everyone. If you could go back and erase every memory of having played a character and go through the process of exploring them again,
oh my gosh,
which one would you choose?
This is so hard. Man, that's such a good question, but I don't know. It would probably be for the selfish reason of that would mean that I would get to re-record it all over again, and we've done so many episodes that I would love to do that all over again, would be Lucy in Fairy Tale. Just because there's been such an extensive journey, and so many things have happened that it would be fun to get to relive them again, but I wouldn't know what happened, it was very hard. If I got to know what was going to happen and go, okay, this is where her character's going to go, but at the same time, it's definitely, it's a catch-22, because I've had so much fun working on that character and learning as she's learning, and the same with Asuna. The director wanted me to watch ahead of time, so I watched the whole series and then started dubbing it. And so I knew what was going to happen. And those like last few episodes leading up to the end of season one, I was just like, oh, this is so brutal. This is so brutal. So if I could erase my knowledge of that and just know, like, going in, like, it's okay. Nothing bad's going to happen. But that would have made that last episode that much more brutal. So I don't know. I mean, when he goes, You know what happens in the next episode. I go, I know. Can we not do it today? It's been a good day. It was just like such a good show, but it's like so, it's so emotionally investing. So I guess that probably would be it. I wouldn't know what was going to happen. So that was, but they've all been great shows to work on, so.
Amazing. You know, you've worked on a lot of different projects, covered a lot of different areas in anime. What was it like to do Panty and Stocking?
It was really cool, and it was really scary at first, because when I auditioned for the show, the style of animation, and I thought it was really brightly colored. I'm like, this reminds me of Invader Zim in an anime. And so I was really excited about that, and when I auditioned, the character that I did not audition for was the character that I ended up getting cast in. I didn't audition for the Demon Sisters because I didn't think, I saw that they needed to have a lower range, and I thought of all of the voice actresses at Funimation, I am not going to get cast in a lower range voice. This is not going to happen. But the director was Colleen, and she called me in and she said, so I cast you and you're going to be playing my sister and your voice is going to be deeper than mine. And I thought, like, no, it's not. But she was like, no, I'll work with you on it. And then after everything passed, I was like, the show is just written really funny. Jamie Markey wrote, I think most of the scripts, and Monica may have written a few. That the scripts were really fun. Nisox is the only one who doesn't use adult language in that way, which is everywhere else in the show. But she uses what Colleen called Tatumisms, which was J. Michael Tatum. And so she and Jamie would call Tatum and say, give me words that you think are so fun that you never get to use in a sentence. And so Tatum would give a whole vocabulary, and then she's like, great, now I'm going to need the definitions of those words. And that was how Nisox's dialogue was developed, so that was really awesome. And so, like, I should have started making a dictionary, so by the end of the show I had everything, because there were some words that I felt like, man, this is genius. I want to use this. I'm going to use this forever. And then I couldn't remember what it was. that was really fun to work on.
Three of you've had a wide range of roles, from Akane in Psychopaths to Lucy to various others. What kind of role do you feel suits you the best, and why do you think that's the case?
Well, it would depend on the day. I mean, there are some days where I think, like, I'm very happy and cheerful and really bubbly. And oddly enough, normally on the days that I feel that way, I end up getting called in to play a villain. It's just like how the chips fall. I don't know why that's the case. But there have been times where I've been like, man, today would be a great day if I needed to be a serial killer. I just have like a lot of pent-up frustration, and that's usually when I'll go take a kickboxing class or something like that. But it definitely depends on the day, whichever part of my personality is the strongest. That's one of the reasons I love being an actor, is I like exploring different aspects of myself or things that I didn't know I could do. When I worked on Bones, it was the worst audition of my life to audition to play a killer on the show. And went in, I could not cry, I could not feel any remorse for what I had done. And then they called me and they said I got cast in the show, and I thought, like, how is that possible? The one, like, job requirement was I was supposed to be crying, and I couldn't do it that day for whatever reason. And I just didn't have it in me. And he was like, I just felt there was a lot of honesty to you. And then he was like, so now you're going to have to cry. And that was like so crazy what people see in an audition, that I'm like, well, I didn't think I had the capacity or the ability to do this. And that's what makes it so fun as an actor, is sometimes the characters surprise you, and a director will see something in you and say, I want you to play this role. And I go in, don't think I have any ability to play that role, and I shock myself, and it's all because the director saw something. So I think that's kind of cool.
Thank you.
You know, in the vein of the questions you've asked, you have had a wide variety of roles, but I'm always curious, what is the difference in playing a character who's perceived to be a much more likable and dependable character, as opposed to someone like Mika, who is a much more much more controversial place in the series.
Yeah, it's definitely easier going to an anime convention to play a more likable character because fans are very passionate, and when you are, like, a controversial character, they don't feel bad about telling you that they hate you. And they're like, no, not you, not you, but your character. And I'm like, well, when you say I hate you, it's kind of, I get it, but it's weird. So it's easier when it's a likable character that they're like, I love her, I think she's awesome, like Asuna. Everybody says such lovely things about how they feel about Asuna, which is great. But when I worked on Psycho Pass, and the other one was Tsunako in Shiki. I mean, I've played a couple other villains, but depending on... Oh, yeah! Depending on who you talk to... Tsunako, I adore, but I've talked to a couple other people. I was in a panel where, like, it was almost like a civil war broke out, and there were, like, three people yelling at each other, like, no, the humans were wronged. No, the vampires were taken advantage of. And I was like, I am not going to say a word. It got really messy, and it was very scary. But I kind of like that. I think as an actor, your goal is to make somebody feel something. So if they feel intense hatred for a character or an intense love for the character, that makes me happy. They felt something. So, I mean, sure, they can hate her all she wants. I'm going to love her, even though she makes some weird choices. But, yeah, it's fun.
Awesome. So, my little niece, I have to ask this question.
Okay.
She really wants to know. She watches a lot of Disney films, and so she wants to be a voice actress.
Cool.
Not an actress, but an actual voice actress.
Cool.
No live action. So, I guess, what kind of tips would you recommend an up-and-comer?
I think... Even though she just wants to focus on voiceover, her ultimate goal should be to take any sort of acting classes possible. Improv classes, like voice and diction classes, stage, film, commercials, any and every acting class possible. It's such a competitive industry to be in that if you are just doing voiceover work, it makes it really hard to make a living because voiceover work, there's a large number of talented actors, and they can reuse those actors as much as possible because you never see their face. So you want to kind of say, like, well, I can do some commercial work because commercials tend to pay well, and so you're supplementing your income doing on-camera commercials. You can do stage work. Stage is really great for exploring characters that you didn't think that you could do because people will redo shows all the time. I was playing like a mother and a grandmother in high school, which I didn't know I could do, but I was able to find different voices that I did not know that I was able to voice. You also can take more risks in stage, and you feel safer trying out those different things, whereas for a film or voiceover, you get one audition opportunity. There's no growth. You get one audition opportunity. If you get cast, that's what you're doing for the show, and you kind of grow along the way, but you need to be ready to go for the audition, whereas for a play, they have more time. You can try different things in the rehearsal process, find out what works, what doesn't, whereas you're a little more limited for film and TV because they have to go so fast. So your exploration happens in classes before you get cast. Improv is great. Improv has saved me so many times, especially for voiceover, for anime. Again, you're confined by the animation. You use it as a guide, but also it has to fit the flaps. So you have to find out as many different ways as you can say one sentence. And sometimes you just, your brain is done. And so I'll think of, like, okay, what is the most absurd thing I could possibly say in these flaps? Because the rule for improv is, like, you know, when you do, it's a rule of three. The first two things, normal, a little crazy, totally off the wall. So once you get to the totally off the wall thing, normally you release any sort of expectations for yourself. And there's been a couple times where I've, like, made a joke to the director, and he's like, that fits. That's good. We're keeping it. And I'm like, whoa. That happened a lot for Sergeant Frog. But it's very liberating and it's very freeing. Also, because this business is so competitive, and one day you might have a great audition and you might be working a lot and you might have a crazy busy month, and the next 2 months you don't work again, you have to be really good about balancing your checkbook and also being really good about working on other jobs and being very diligent while you're at a real life job, so that when you have to take some time off to be an actor, they're like, sure, we'll work with you and come back when you're done. Because it is a very difficult business. It's a very fickle business. But if you love it and you can't do anything else, I was told by someone, if you could do anything else and be happy, you should do it. But if you wake up in the morning and say, I hate my life when I'm not an actor, then it makes up for the wins of being an actor are that much better, and because there will be tough times. So.
I would be remiss not to ask this, as I spent way too many hours playing this game. How did you get involved with Gearbox's Borderlands series and just Gage?
It was awesome. Chris Sabat. We recorded that at his studio in Dallas. I had worked with them on a couple incidental characters earlier on in the process, and then like a couple weeks before my birthday, and then the year the game came out in October, they called me and said, hey, can we have you audition for this random character for this game for Willow 2, because that was the game that it was going under because they didn't want anybody knowing it was Borderlands. And so I was like, sure. And I said, what's the character? And Sabat was like, well, it's this kind of character that if she found her brother's, Grand Theft Auto, she would play it, and if she ran over a hooker, she'd be like, oh gosh, that's horrible, but also really funny, and then laugh about it. And I was like, oh, okay. And he was like, yeah, I read the breakdown and I thought of you. And I was like, thank you, I think. So I went in, got the sides, recorded it in my closet, and never heard back. And then I texted him, I was like, hey, just want to make sure you got the audition. It's been like 2 days. He goes, yeah, you got the job. And I was like, you call somebody and let them know that. He was like, so can you come in next week and record? I was like, yeah, I'm coming home for a wedding and for my birthday. So I came in and I recorded Borderlands, and then I would go to rehearsal dinner for my best friend's wedding. And the groomsmen thought I was really awesome because I was saying really inappropriate things, like, let's blow this wedding up, or like, we're going to go down with a bang, like the whole time in the wedding planner did not think I was very comical. Because I was like in Gage mindset. I would record for like 6 hours and then go do a wedding event and then like record some more and then go do another wedding event. And everyone's like, so what game are you working on? I was like, I can't tell you. It was also really hard because she was the DLC. So the bus wraps are out, the billboards are up, and I'm like, this is so cool, like, I'm in that game! And so, but I couldn't say that, so I'm just, like, taking pictures all over the place, and people are like, oh my gosh, are you working on that? I'm like, no, I just love bus wraps. Leave me alone! So, yeah, it was really, really cool, and it was just one of those things that, like, it fell into my lap, and they said, like, yeah, we would like you to audition for it, and then it all worked out, so that was really magical, because it was really a fun process.
About the web series that you're doing,
Yeah.
Out of all the TV and movie and voice acting projects, why would you go to a web series, and does it speak to the future you feel that the internet plays in television and movies?
Yeah, I mean, the web series, I've worked on a couple web series. Throwing Stones specifically, I had done a short film with Bart and Jason, and they had expressed an idea and a concept they wanted to do for a feature film, but feature films are really expensive. The web series we were able to knock out in like 2 days in a school that they worked in the summer. So we were able to knock it out. With a web series, you can kind of get creative with the type of camera that you use. You can usually do cheaper production. Whereas with a film, if it's not shot like beautifully, you can't go with the artistic vibe. With a web series, you have a little more freedom. You also don't have to have producers that and distributors that want a say in how the film is made. With a web series, you can put it up on YouTube tomorrow and everybody's like, they can love it, they can hate it. So there's a lot of freedom to do content that you want to do. I have a lot of friends that are YouTubers. I worked with Shane Dawson on Not Cool, and so I was discussing with him about the freedom of making your own content, which is really exciting as It's certainly lovely to get to work on like Bones or a Jerry Bruckheimer TV show or something like that. That's amazing. But the opportunities to do that are fewer and far between. You have to go through the network. You have to go through all these things to get approval, and that takes like 3 to 5 weeks. Then they have to get all the editing. Whereas if you choose to make a funny like short video, you can put it up on Vine tomorrow, and people have had careers blow up, and then people want them on those shows. So it's just different avenues to take. And I think the amazing thing about web content is it's really opened up the possibilities of anyone can make their own show, and you don't know what that's going to lead to. People have had offers to do books or make movies or things like that just based on a character that they created and put online. So I think the freedom and the potential to start a career as an actor or as a creator, as a writer, is really amazing, and it's endless because of web content and YouTube series, or Vine or whatever the case may be. So it's definitely something that I want to explore more. There's a couple ideas that I would love to do. You can usually do it for cheaper than you could for anything else, but I just think it's another way to work. And if you're an actor, you're like, I'll take any opportunity. Just let me play and do a character. So.
You were given an opportunity to work with director Richard Linklater
in
the film Fast Food Nation. And I know it wasn't your first live-action role, but I'm curious to know if there was anything about acting and filmmaking that you learned while making this film with him.
Absolutely. It wasn't my first feature film role, but it was my first like crazy big budget project where I was on set for like 3 or 4 weeks. I was 17 when I was working on that, so I was like leaving high school, driving up for a couple days and shooting. He was working on Boyhood at the time. I don't remember what year they were in, but I know there was a couple weekends where he's like, yeah, I'm going to be heading down to wherever I'm shooting another film. And I was like, that's crazy. What is he working on? And then I found out about the 12-year project, which is what it was called at the time. And so it was very interesting. A lot of directors, it depends on who you're working with. Some of them really want the script to stay the same. They want all the words to be exactly the same, whereas Rick would pull Ashley Johnson and I aside and say, I just don't like the words here. Like, what would you guys talk about? These are the bullet points that need to be said in the scene. And I was like, do you want us to run through it and come up with something? He goes, no, I want it to be different every time. Just have fun. And then we'd start running the scene. And so with him, it was really interesting to see that he wanted really the honesty of the moment, and he wanted the takes to be different every time. And I met Ethan Hawke during that project, and because I had worked with Ethan Hawke, then that led to me working with Ethan Hawke on The Hot Estate, which was a film adaptation of a book that he had written. And the guy who played my boyfriend in Fast Food Nation actually ended up playing my boyfriend in The Hot Estate, and we just like improvised for a full day in El Paso. And Ethan Hawke was like, I just want to see you guys play. So it was both of those were both very freeing sets, and I know that Ethan Hawke and Richard Linklater have a long working history together, so I felt like they directed very similarly. They really like to surprise people. Richard Linklater would tell me, this is how I want you to play the scene. The guy who's playing my boyfriend, Glenn Powell, who was just in the most recent Expendables movie, which was crazy seeing his face on like billboards. But he had told me, don't let him hug you. Like, you guys are in a fight. You want to be near him. And he had told Glenn, he was like, you, like, just want to be near her. Like, I don't care what she does. If she's pushing you away, like, just hug her. Just hold her tight. So, like, as soon as the scene started, I'm like, I need to stay away from him because that was my direction. And he was told to, like, hug me. It was the most, like, uncomfortable, awkward scene. And they said cut, and Rick was like, that was the most beautiful moment I've ever seen in my life. It was so good. It was a really fun set to be on. And it was, like, a who's who of... I mean, I was showing up to set, I'm like, you're on That 70s Show. Hello, Bruce Willis. Hi, Greg Kinnear. This is really weird. This is my life right now. And then when I would go back to high school, I'm like, this is also weird. But it was a really fun experience.
Really nice.
So then I heard Steins Gate.
Oh, awesome.
I was wondering, because Susan, the whole time, she knows everything and everyone else doesn't.
Yeah.
And I was just wondering what were the dynamics of that, and how did you play that, what challenges you struggled with?
Well, because that show, it's so complicated. I always say that's a show that makes my brain hurt, and I loved it so much because of that. I love stories that make you think. I love characters that make you think. If I don't, like, finish watching a movie or finish working on something and I'm not tired, I don't feel like that I was fully engaged. So with that show, Colleen had told me, she's like, I really think that you're going to love this anime. It's going to be one of your favorites. And I was like, that's a bold statement, because I don't think I auditioned for that anime. I think I had sent like a generic audition in, but they didn't release the sides because they didn't want to give too much of the show away. And she was trying to, she had on the big window that we have that separates us from the, that separates the recording from the engineer and the director, they had like dry erase markers and all of the timelines happening on so that you could track it. And because we don't really get the full story, that Suzuha was in a big portion of the show, but she would show up here and then show up later. And so Colleen was trying to keep me informed of like, this is where we are in the timeline. And I said, no, it makes absolute sense. We're in this timeline. She went back here and then she went back and she goes, okay, you are weird because a lot of people don't understand this timeline. And I go, no, this is the way my brain works. And she goes, I knew this was your character. And I loved doing that. I loved working on the show. I did not expect like the twist with her at the end. And we had to record that a couple of times because the first three times I was working on it, I was crying hysterically that you couldn't understand. So she was like, I really love the emotion, but can we rein it back in so we can hear the words? I'm like, that's a good point. So it was, that was a really awesome show to get to play with. And that was one where we got to take a little bit of freedom with the lines because she says a lot of wacky things, and so we had to make that a little more westernized while still maintaining the show, as that was the note we were given from the Japanese creators, which is always nice when they do that. They're like, we don't understand how to make these jokes funny for you, so please make them funny for you. So that was really cool. But I love time travel, and I hope there's more of that. I mean, there's time travel. The possibilities are endless, right? So, yeah. So it was really, really fun.
It's just announced a new Sky Kid series.
Yay! Let's hope that there's Suzuha in it.
Yeah. A smile. It's like, yes.
I know. I'm like, yes, please.
I know through Funimation, you guys work a lot individually, but there's a lot of practical jokes that you play on each other.
Always, yeah.
What's one of the funniest ones? I know that they tried to get you with a skeleton or something. And
yes.
And you ended up hugging it.
What's with a mannequin.
What's one of the funnier ones that you
film? Gosh. I haven't been in the studio at Funimation in a while. I mean, I go to the studio, but when I'm there, it's usually for like 2 days, and we like try to knock everything out as fast as possible. We definitely always leave bombs for each other. So we will, whoever records first, will get to change some lines and say inappropriate things or really awkward things to the other person, and then we get to hear them and enjoy said bomb. And usually it derails the session for a little bit because we can't unhear what we just heard. But I do remember there was one time, it wasn't really even a prank, it was just like, this is the weirdest thing that's ever happened while I was at work. We had a horrible storm, and this was when Funimation at one point was recording 10 to 6 and then 6 to 10. So I had been there from 10 to 6, and I was going to be there for a full day of 10 to 10. And I was recording, and all of a sudden the power went out. And I remember everyone was like, oh my gosh, we hope we didn't lose what we had just been working on. When was the last time you saved? When was the last time you saved? And then we walked outside, and all of the other booths had, the power had gone out in the whole building. And it was because there was a huge, huge storm. You know, stuff was blowing everywhere. It looked like there was a tornado that was going to happen. There was a tree that was like almost flat on someone's car. And we were locked in the building. We weren't allowed to leave. It wasn't safe. So I remember Aaron Dismuke was there. This was when he was still in high school. So he was like, as soon as we were like, well, we're taking a break, everybody goes, Aaron, go do your homework. And he was like, no. And so I think at one point, Aaron and a couple of the other guys, maybe Joel, I don't remember who was directing at the time, they were like racing with the dollies that they used to take all the product into the building. They were on their stomachs like doing a Superman across this huge like floor, because we couldn't record and we couldn't leave, and I was joking around saying that I was like the one causing the storm. So at one point I was like, yeah, I don't want to make a big deal about it, guys, but when I put my hands up like this and I do this like really weird thing, like lightning happens and everyone's like, oh yeah, let's see you do it. I go, I don't really want to cause any drama. It looks pretty bad out there. And they were like, no, no, no. So after about 15 minutes, I tried it, and I did that, and, like, huge lightning happened. I was like, I'm not touching anything again. But, yeah, it was a really fun day, or a really fun night, rather. And I remember thinking, like, this is our job. Like, this is what we're doing for work. I think we were able to get some more recording done. The power finally went back on. But it was like a really fun, crazy bonding experience, like a weird camp in the middle of the work day, which was cool.
Crap, he just took my question. What would you say has been your most challenging role, either from a character standpoint or from just limitations on what you can do? Because I know earlier you mentioned that sometimes there are some restrictions on from the licensors, from the Japanese.
Yeah, I don't think I've had any restrictions that way that made the character difficult. I know there were I was talking to someone earlier, there were four characters for me that I think were very monumental in my growth as an actor. And when I first started, I was very tentative and really afraid to do them. One was Setsuna in Negima. I had never done a fighting character before, and when I got called in, they said, we need to do like a quick test audition, and Jamie was directing, and she goes, this is going to be a fighting character, we're going to have to do fighting noises and all of that stuff. And I was really nervous, because I was a super girly girl growing up. We don't make like car noises or fighting noises. That was like what I thought boys did, which I hate that society puts that idea into boys and girls' heads of like, this is a boy thing, this is a girl thing. It's a people thing. Like, do whatever you want to do. So I had to learn fighting stuff, and now the roles that I've worked on, I do fighting stuff all the time. It's one of my most favorite things to do, is just watch a scene and be able to do fighting reactions forever. And that was all because I worked with Jamie on that and got really comfortable with that kind of stuff. The first time I worked on a lower voiced kind of character was in knee socks and panty and stocking, and I was really scared to do that. And then that opened up the possibility of, like, I can do this. I got cast as Rode and Dee Grayman, and Todd was like, I want her to be kind of flirtatious, a little seductive, but still playful. And I was like, I hate those words. I don't associate them with myself. I'm very uncomfortable by them. And I immediately was like, please just cast somebody else. Like, don't make me do this. Like, I'm so uncomfortable. And he was like, no, 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 it's going to be good for you. And now I've played characters where that is just kind of the nature of the beast. It's not one of my favorite things to do, but I know I can do it, and I'm comfortable enough to do it, and that was all because he forced me to do something I didn't want to do. Yeah, I've just played a couple like more regal characters, and I didn't know that I was comfortable doing that. So I always try to, if there's an audition where I think I don't feel comfortable doing this at all, this is not in my wheelhouse, I will absolutely send in the audition for that, and I'll let the director know going in, this isn't like me at all. Please let me know if this is kind of works. And there was one anime that I worked on where I needed to play like a 14-year-old boy, and I had played like a 5- and 6-year-old boy, but I'm like, I don't think I can play that old. And I sent in the audition. I was like, I don't know if this works. And he's like, oh yeah, it's going to the producers. We'll see what they say. And I'm like, wow, got through the, okay, sweet. So yeah, I'm always trying to push myself and challenge myself because of working on those few roles in the beginning that made me so uncomfortable I wanted to cry. But yeah, it's cool.
Now, on the note of controversy, since
yes,
you like to play controversial characters and things like that, would you say that playing this kind of characters and that your preference for them almost kind of relates back to your ability to relate the emotions into your real life and the challenges that it allows you to, the complex feelings?
Yeah, definitely. I think that's one of the fun things about being an actor is specifically I found that I'm more drawn to characters that people don't think I'm like. Or if somebody will tell me, yeah, I don't know if you can play that character, especially for a live action. If somebody's like, I don't know, you seem like such a happy person, I don't think you can play this really dark, suicidal character. I'm like, challenge accepted. Because I think one of the gifts of being an actor is to be able to step into as many shoes as possible and live a fuller life experience than I would if I was just being myself. It's also, when I worked on Not Cool, some of the things that I was saying and the things that I was doing, I was not comfortable with at all. Some of them could have gotten me arrested if I was doing them in my real life. But every day I would show up and I'm like, okay, this is a hurdle. We're doing it. And then at the end of the day, I was like, I am so proud of myself that I did not, like, back down. Like, I mean, it was almost like, we're about to go on this roller coaster. You're waiting in line. You're waiting in line. You're waiting in line. And you can jump out of line. But once I'm on set, I can't jump out of line. Like, they're all waiting on me. I have to do it. I have to jump on the roller coaster. I know there was specifically a scene. It was on my first day of shooting for Not Cool where my character gets thrown up on. And I was like, oh, it's happening. It's happening. And I couldn't know that it was coming. The character didn't know it was coming. And after the first time it happened, I was like, I can do this. Like, I can be, this is a total comedic moment, and I can do it. Like, any sort of precedent I set for myself to put myself in a box, I can jump out of the box. I'm the only one building the box for myself. So I love doing those kind of characters that I'm not, that are controversial to me or controversial to someone else, because I want a controversial character to expand someone else's perspective of what is right and wrong. I mean, everything's a gray area. So if they say, like, I hate her, why do you hate her? And then they're starting to realize, like, well, why do I not like that character? Well, that's not that bad. Oh, I do like that. And it makes people, I think controversial characters tend to make people feel a little more open-minded about life in general, which I always respect in human beings. So if I can go into creating a character with an open mind and why do I hate this character, she probably just thinks she's defending her family, or she thinks that because she was wrong, these are the choices she's making, and she's completely justified in that. So that's one of the things that I love to do, is justify their actions. So,
so cool.
Yeah, so fun.
So I'm assuming that there have been times, maybe gone through weeks or months, where you just never got a role.
Yeah.
But the fact that you've been successful today, that shows that you've clearly overcome some kind of obstacles. So I guess, how did you get yourself over the hump sometimes? How did you persevere?
It usually happens at least 20 times a year that I'm like, man, what am I doing wrong? And I might be doing really well in voiceover and not getting cast in any on-camera work. And I'm like, what am I missing? What am I not doing right? Is it something about my look? Am I just not marketable? Do I need to, like, get a haircut? Do I need to go take some classes? Do I need to, like, what am I not doing? Am I acting weird in an audition setting? How do I come off? And then sometimes I'm doing really well for on-camera work and I'm not getting cast for voiceover, and I'm like, do I need to, like, work on another range? Am I, like, kind of annoying? Like, what is the deal? Did I upset someone? And ultimately, I have started doing meditation work and yoga, and I'll work out. I've started working my neighbor is a pranic healer, which is an energetic healer, and anything that is not acting wise, I will usually, like, dissect myself from the universe of the what's wrong with me, why don't people like me, is it something about me, like, what did they say, they said I was too short or too tall. It doesn't matter. I mean, you can get cast for the most ridiculous reasons, because you look like someone's daughter and they haven't seen her in 15 years, and that's why they cast you, is they want to look like you or they want to be around you. I mean, it's the most absurd things that happen. So when you realize that everything about this business is so subjective and it's all based on someone's opinion, it kind of takes the pressure off. It doesn't have anything to do with me whether I get cast or whether I don't get cast. And so success is such a relative term, and one day I might be doing great and the other day I'm not. But as long as I'm, like, hanging out with my family, and I measure my success on if I felt like I did the best work I could at that audition? And going into the audition room, did I feel like I connected with the casting director or the reader and made them feel like they had a good day? Did I have fun with them? Did I connect with them person to person? Because if I go into the audition saying, I want this role so bad, it like is so desperate and it comes off really aggressive, that really it's an opportunity to play a character, have some fun, experiment, and do my version of that character the only way that I can. It could be the only time I get to play that character, so I better enjoy it. And that's usually how I'm like, if I felt like it was a great audition and I had a lot of fun, it was a successful day. I got to be an actor today and I got to meet someone else and get to experience a human interaction with them that I wouldn't have normally. So I have to kind of remove myself, and that's how I get past it, because sometimes it is so hard, because I love this business so, so much. I've been in this business for over 20 years, and there have been many a time where I've said, I don't think I can do this anymore, and I'll try to do something else and say, that's what I have to do. That's what I have to do to be happy. So I'll put up with the times where I, like, am just so self-critical. Because it's the only thing that I want to do and feel fully fulfilled doing. So.
Actually, to go right off that, I can totally relate. Yeah. My living is off my photography.
Yeah, absolutely.
Also, having majored in theater, I walked away from that being overly critical of everything.
Yeah.
So, totally agree.
Well, it's the whole thing of being an artist, and I think it's such an important aspect of life and people that are artists for their living. I think it's very admirable because it's so difficult, because your success is based on whether or not somebody else has a good day and decides to think that, you know, your painting is pretty or your photo is pretty, and different things speak to different people. So your success is based on one person's opinion. Like, that's not fair.
My question, what do you find is the most challenging emotion and physicality to convey in voiceover?
Emotions I just enjoy doing. I love when I feel like I just went through a roller coaster in a session. Normally I feel like I just got beat up because I'm just so tired. If I get to do like a character that is like so, so furious and just wants to like strangle people, I will leave the session like shaking, and I will feel so awesome about myself because I'm like, I was in it, that was amazing, and now I just want a nap. And the same thing with people that are overly, overly joyed or so terrified. I was doing a video game recently where it was like 30 hours and the character was constantly in fear of being murdered. And so like, I mean, I had the director, he's like, your adrenals must be shot because you are just like at this pace the whole time. And every time I finished the session, I was like, that's what it feels like to breathe. But I love doing that, and I love seeing what that does to a physical body, is just dealing with those emotions. So I think that's exciting. I guess the physicality that's the hardest to do is sometimes you're confined because you can't move. Like, I usually wear a lot of jewelry and there can't be any noise. So being confined into one space and having to express all of the emotions that you would on camera, people would be like, sure, run around. This is what you should be doing. And you can't run. You got to just stand still and keep all of that bottled up, and it all has to come through your voice. So that's probably difficult. I haven't really been able to tackle like monster voices or monster physicality. I've seen other actors that will get into like really weird contorted positions, and it makes their body do crazy stuff.
Like Mark Hamill, when he did the Joker, he had to literally jump out of his seat and just be as physical with the character.
Yeah, which is really cool when they'll let you do that. Some directors, I've noticed, I have to stand a certain way when I play a different character, and it's not even something that I am doing on purpose, but I'll notice, like, every time I come in to play this character, I stand this way. There are some directors that will say, like, can you not move? And then there's some directors that are like, I don't care. If you need to move a little bit, you need to move a little bit. I'm fine with it. So it just depends on the director you're working with and how they feel about that. But it's fun and it's an adventure, and every day is different.
Hollywood is recreating a lot of Japanese properties as live actions, movies. And we heard about the Ghost in the Shell movie with Scarlett Johansson
Yeah.
coming out and whatnot. Do you feel like you're confident with any of the characters that you played voice acting that you could transition into live acting? Like,
I would love that.
Hey, would you be interested? And who do you feel confident you could portray in a live action?
I don't know. I mean, it would all be, I guess, based on if they thought that I physically resembled the character. And the first character that comes to mind that I would, absolutely love to do in a live-action setting, because that would be combining two things that I have always wanted to work on, would be, a ghost hunt movie live-action. When I was working on it, people were constantly coming up to me. My haircut was the same length, and people were coming up to me while I was working on it going, oh, my God, you look like her. I feel like you are her. And Todd Haberkorn, who played Naru, he kind of resembles Naru, so people were like, man, if they made a movie, you guys could just play yourselves. And I would love that, because it would be, if I love supernatural stuff, I love anything that relates to ghosts or communicating with something beyond what we know. And so that would be really fun. I mean, I would love to do fairy tale. I would love to do anything like that. But I've realized I play a lot of blonde characters, and I was blonde for a movie once, and I did not pull off the look well. So I don't think they would ask me to do that character just based on the hair color thing. But yeah, if somebody was interested in me doing it and said it would be up to them going, yeah, you look like her, I would jump at the chance to play any of the characters that I've done. Suzuha would be really fun, too. It would be time travel all over the place. I don't know if I can pull off the, shorts jumpsuit, though. I think I did mention that while we were working on it. I'm like,
you got it.
I'm like, that's a rough look to pull off. She does it, but I don't know.
You're fine.
Okay. Okay. Well, thank you. That would be awesome.
Thank you, Foster.
So another favorite anime comedy of ours has to be My Bride is a Mermaid.
And, oh, sweet, yeah.
You play the sun's rival, Lunar.
Yeah.
Bit of a two-part question. As she usually switches her personality on the fly, was there any challenges when it came to, put bluntly, bring the crazy to that role? And was it difficult at all to sing her song, Lunarian?
The singing, the only thing that was difficult about that is I have a very low confidence level when it comes to singing. So I was terrified to get to do that. But now I sing for stuff all the time. That was actually probably another character that when they made me start singing for that, I was like, oh, God, this is happening. I'm rushing back to high school and I don't like it. This is not going to end well. But yeah, that singing for that was really cool, and then immediately after I did that show, I got cast in a movie where I had to sing, and I'm like, I guess we're doing this. We're doing the singing thing. This is happening. Okay. As far as bringing the crazy, I have found that I have kind of gotten typecast as, any character that is, off the walls, bonkers. Oh, sure, we will do that. And I'm okay with that, because I enjoy bringing the crazy. I think Sabbat, when he first met me, he was like, you have an insanely powerful set of lungs for being such a small person. And I'm like, thank you. I appreciate that. So yeah, it's been really fun. I think if anything, it was hard to bring Lunar down, because I wanted her to be crazy all the time, because I think that's just fun. So yeah, but that was a really good, challenging role. The challenging part of that was really the singing.
What's the best piece of advice a fellow actor has given you about acting?
Thank you. The best part of advice, I actually, Renee O'Connor, who played Gabrielle in Xena Warrior Princess, I worked with her in a film and she played my mom, and I think she had told me that this is a rough business, and she was like, I don't want you listening to what anybody else tells you that you need to be. She's like, people are constantly going to be telling you, oh, you know what, if you were to get this done, or if you were to start marketing yourself this way, or if you would start picking these roles and don't do these roles, I know you like doing this, but that's not really how people see you. She's like, forget it. You are who you are, and if people don't see you that way, that's their own problem. They need to have a broader perspective. So she was like, just do you. There's only one you. And I had another actor who had told me when I walk into any audition to know that I have whatever is needed to get the job. Even if they don't necessarily want me for the job, my job is to walk in knowing I'm prepared and capable to do this role as I am. If they don't like my take on it, that's fine. That doesn't mean I couldn't have done it. I just couldn't have done it the way they wanted to go with the project. So she's like, don't go in there saying, like, what do I have to do to change myself to get the job? Go in there saying, like, I'm here. If you want to work with me, awesome. If you don't, that's cool, too. No hard feelings. And I think those are both two very important things, because I'm such a people pleaser and I'm such a perfectionist that I'm like, I want to do it right. I want to be exactly what they want. I want to walk in and then go, that's the girl. And sometimes that just doesn't happen and they'll see that with somebody else. But there have been times where they've been like, as soon as you walked in, we knew you got the job. And I'm like, everybody should have that feeling. And everybody does. When it's the right job, when it's the right opportunity, everything seems to align, and that's when you know it's the right role for you. And that needs to happen for everybody. It can't be one person all the time. That's not fair. So.
You were talking about ghost time a little while ago. Have you ever yourself wanted to be a part of a paranormal investigation, part of a team out of Middleborough, Mass?
Oh, cool!
And I've been a paranormal investigator for 18 years. And I've talked to Todd Abercorn and J. Michael Tatum, who both would love to do an investigation, but never had the opportunity. Is that something that you would like to try?
Oh my gosh, I'm so conflicted because I say, yes, I would love to do that, but I have had some ghost experiences in my life, and I always am like, I would love to do that. Like, Ghost Whisperer, Medium, those shows, I'm like, I would love to be able to, like, communicate with the dead, or, like, see things from another dimension, or, like, investigate all of that stuff. But then when I find myself in the situation where I'm like, I think that Alexis Tipton and I, we were at a convention, and both of us got, like, physically nauseous whenever we would sit in this room. And we didn't know why. And we ended up investigating. And it was a, I think, World War I. It was a vet hospital. And it was a fairground, but they had sent all of these soldiers back. And the room that we couldn't sit in was the room where people died. And they would, like, stay in the room. And Alexis and I, like, couldn't be in there. And so we'd like looked it up that day, because like there were autograph sessions in there, and we were like, we could do it, we could do it. And after like 30 minutes, we'd be like, I can't eat, I don't want any water, we just need a break. We're just like so miserable. And we investigated it, and they said, yeah, there's a lot of people that go in there and they say they have like stomach issues. And then we further investigated, and multiple years later, there was a stabbing where a woman got stabbed because she there was like a competition, like they do over pies or whatever the food was, between these two women, and one woman won, and the other one was mad about it, so she stabbed her in the stomach. And so so Alexis and I were like, oh, that's why our stomach hurts, somebody's trying to stab us, or that girl's there, or like, we didn't know. But so while it was happening, we were like, this is so cool. We are never going back in that room again. So, like, I want to say that I would be really interested in, like, investigating stuff, but I think I would be, like, such a chicken. So that's why I'm, like, I'm so glad I'm an actor, because in an actor, I could do that. Like, I know what the payoff's going to be. I know I can look scared, or I need to look scared. But if it was really happening, and I didn't know it was going to happen, or if somebody was going to get possessed, or, you know, what the deal was, the unfinished business with that spirit, I don't know how I would handle it. But it would be pretty cool. I have always wanted to go to Salem for the... Oh, yeah. That's like on my bucket list of things to do, so...
You may want to do Danvers, because Salem is just one big tourist trap. Danvers is where it really happened.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
To even go up there, my mom used to live at the base of what was the Danvers Mental Institution, also now known as what is Arkham Asylum.
Cool.
Stories of the weirdest.
That's awesome. Yeah, that would be super cool. I know, it would be so fun though. That's so cool. So cool.
As man personnel, you have the role of Silly Beans, which you are absolutely killing it up.
Thank you so much.
You do a great job.
Thank you.
I've been curious, what was your reaction to receiving that role? And even more so, what was it like trying to keep that under wraps until they finally unveiled it at, I think it was at ASIN?
I guess they announced it at least the big announcement that I went to, we had Sailor Moon Day at Anime Expo, but I found out that I was cast on my way to my rehearsal dinner for my wedding, and I was so excited, And I was also very, like, it went from, oh my gosh, this is so surreal, this is not happening. I'm like, I'm just excited to get married. I have fabricated this email. This didn't really happen. And so I got another email, and I was like, okay, I can't fabricate two emails. This is real. And so I was like, well, I know it's a strict NDA, and we're not supposed to tell anybody, but I'm getting married, so I feel like I really need to be honest with my husband about what's happening. So, and I was like, I also can't share this excitement alone. So I had, like, told him, I was like, I'm working on a really exciting anime, and I didn't tell him what it was, but I told him when I had first started working on anime, all I knew of anime was Sailor Moon, Pokemon, and DBZ. He loves Pokemon, so he was like, is it one of the core three? I was like, it's one of the core three. And he was like, oh my god! I didn't realize that, like, up until, like, when I finally told him, he thought I was working on Pokemon. So I think he was a little let down that it was Sailor Moon. But he was like, I actually, oddly enough, had a, like, if I was going to date any of the Sailor Scouts when I was a kid, it would have been Sailor Venus, and I married her. That's kind of cool. So I was like, and you didn't even know either. But yeah, I was super excited to work on it. And so it was so surreal. I was so excited. And then when I finally got to the session, and all I had to do was, like, an eye catch, because she doesn't show up until later. So all I had to say was, like, Sailor Venus. And we went in. We set the voice. I started getting really nervous. And as soon as the three beeps happened, I couldn't talk. I, like, didn't know. And it was my first time working with that studio. And the director was like, that's where you talk. I go, I know. I'm so sorry. I just now realized that if I screw this up, I'm going to get murdered at an anime convention. And he goes, I think you're going to be good. And I was like, I really appreciate your confidence. Can we just, like, watch it again so I can, like, erase my brain? And he goes, just so you know, the creator did approve you. And I was like, that makes me feel so much better going into, like, an anime convention. I'm going to try so hard, even more, not to screw this up, because now the pressure is really on. So it was very exciting, but it was definitely a mixed emotion of, like, is this real? This is real. This is amazing. Okay, don't screw this up, Jeremy, otherwise you will die. But yeah, it was very exciting. Keeping it a secret was a nightmare because there was so much Sailor Moon merchandise out that hadn't been there for years. I watched the show growing up as a kid, so I was like, oh my god, I want to have this. And they had told us, like, please try to stay away from any merch because if you touch it, people are going to think you're working on the show. And if they guess the cast right, you guys could be in a lot of trouble. And so I was like, oh my god, I want to, I don't know anything. And so people would come up to me, they're like, did you know that they're dubbing a new Sailor Moon? I was like, no, that's so, wow. Wow. When did that happen? They're like, oh, they announced it like a year ago. And I go, I have heard nothing about that ever at all. So we had to dress in our colors the day they announced it at Anime Expo. And we all met in the lobby. And nobody realized, like, it's Sailor Moon Day. You have five or six voice actors standing in the lobby wearing the colors. And people started going, hey, that's Jeremy Lee wearing orange. 70 Shades wearing pink. And I saw the brand manager go, go. All of you, go. Don't talk to each other. And we were like, oh, we heard this was the day that we could talk. And Stephanie's wearing, like, pigtails. And somebody's like, are you Sailor? And she goes, ah! And, like, it was such a stressful day. We had to, like, hide backstage and, like, not talk to each other. And someone was like, oh, my God, you're wearing orange. That's a Sailor V color. I was like, is she orange? That's so crazy. Weird. The only thing I bought before I was announced was a Sailor Moon tank top, and I ordered it Hot Topic online and had it shipped to my house and, like, hid it in a drawer. And so, like, when people would come over, they were like, what's that box? I was like, don't touch that box. It's not a Sailor Moon shirt. That's not what it is. So, yeah, it was really painful to not talk about it. And then once they announced it, we were all like, let's go to the dealer's room, guys. It's on. So we're touching everything. Yeah, so that was awesome.
And that is where the interview ended. However, a couple minutes afterwards, I was able to meet up with Jeremy Lee and ask her about a trip to Three Character Island. Take a listen.
If you were stuck on a deserted island, which three characters that you have played in the past would you like to have around you to keep you sane until your imminent rescue, and why?
Definitely Gage, because she's so insane. Surely she would make me feel sane. Asuna, because she cooks well. And Lucy, because she's got some keys, so she could bring some other people on.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.